So when I hand over, start fucking.
Hello?
Wait. How does that go? At least we got the fuck ups out of the way early.
Oh, fuck. I stepped on the dog's bowl.
From the burning mesas of the Arizona desert to the slot machine clad boardwalks of New Jersey, it is the Imaginarium, the last one of 2023. And I'm Scott Colbert.
And I'm the horror nerd, Todd Staruch. And yes, it is hard to believe it's the end of the year already.
Right? You know, and we are going into our 10th year now.
Wow.
I think about that, and the thought that always comes up right after that is, what the fuck else have you done for 10 years of your life on a weekly or consistent basis, aside from watching Pornhub and giving them
yes.
money?
I mean, nothing. I mean, although in March it'll be my 10th year at my current job, but other than that, nothing. Shit, my marriage didn't even last 10 years.
well, I mean, just the fact you were married at all, you know.
Yeah. So, Scott, you are my longest ever relationship.
I'm so sorry about that, too, because it shows the desperation on both of our parts.
Right, exactly.
So did you have a good Christmas?
I did. You know, anytime I get to spend time with my daughter and with my family is a good time. You mm-hmm. know, we did Christmas Eve at my ex's house. And, you know, I poke fun at my marriage and my ex and stuff all the time. But it is good that we have a good relationship and we can enjoy the holiday, you know, and just be all together without fighting and arguing and stuff, you know. So that was cool. So I spent the night at their house. So we opened presents at their house Christmas morning, then went to my brother's house as we usually do and had Christmas Day with my family. So it was nice. But the day after Christmas is always a very rough day for me, you know. All the anticipation, you know, leading up to it and everything and wrapping presents and everything. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, it's done, you know.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine made a good point. He said, because he loves Christmas as much as I do, and he said, this is the thing, like, leading up to Christmas, even though it's getting cold, like, you walk around town, there's lights and stuff, and people are shopping, and you're getting presents, and then you have Christmas, and then New Year's comes, and then all of a sudden, it's January 2nd, and it's just fucking winter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, you know, you son of a bitch. Like, you had to ruin it. But he's right. And now it's just cold and gray and, you know, and it's just fucking winter.
Yeah. And then you think, oh, shit, when is the next day off that I have? Yeah, which right? Actually, well, for me, it's not that far away. It's just in a couple of weeks for President's Day or Founders Day, whatever the fuck.
President's Day. And you probably work at government, so you probably get off Martin Luther King Day.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So
that's one of the perks of being a government contractor. Yeah, is we follow the government schedule, which is nice.
Yeah. I mean, like I've talked about before, at my company, it almost doesn't matter. Like, we get a decent amount of paid holidays. And because we have flex PTO, it doesn't really matter. Like, it's so weird. Like, when it was the old company before we got acquired, like, you know, you work X number of years and then they bump up your vacation. You get 3 weeks and then you bump up to four. You know, you wait, you look forward to that. Now, I don't have to think about that. And I'm not used to that.
Yeah.
You know, it's just weird. You need to take a day off. You just take a day off.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting how that's changing, you know, from what it used to be. You know, it used to be, you know, you'd get, like you said, a set amount of days off per year, which would increase the longer that you were at the company. You get your benefits, you know, your health insurance, your 401k, and short-term disability, long-term disability, life insurance. And you don't always get all of that anymore now. Depending on the company that you're working for.
Yeah, exactly. And you know what's weird? Look, we could complain all day. Look, I like my job. I like my company. Are there things that I wish were different? Yeah. You know, unless I'm the guy who oils up the, you know, Hawaiian tropic swimsuit models, there is no perfect job.
No, absolutely.
You know
absolutely.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I do like what I do for a living. My company treats us well, you know. But this is the American system, right? People don't realize companies are not even required in the U.S. to give you any paid time off.
Yeah.
You know, so, you know, this isn't Europe where it's government mandated. So when my company says, and my company means it when they say unlimited PTO, my boss never questions me. But then again, I don't abuse it, you know. I don't take a week off and then 6 weeks later, I'm asking for more time off and stuff like that. I have a regular cadence. I take a summer vacation, a winter Christmas vacation, and then a day off here or there as I need it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's pretty fucking cool. You know, I probably could use up the full 4 weeks and no one would say a word, you know?
No, probably not. Because they'd be texting you the entire time.
Well, that's the other thing too. If let's say I take a day off just because it's a mental health day, I just had it and I take a mental health day, I still am somewhat available. Like I'm not, especially with my coworkers. I like the guys on my team. So if they really get stuck and they text me, I will help them out, you know, even on a day off. I never wanted to be that guy. You know, unless I'm legit unreachable, I'm at the doctor or something, or, you know, and they know that when I'm with my daughter, that's it. That takes priority unless the building is burning down. And even then, call the fucking fire department.
Yeah, you know? Right.
But, yeah, I don't know, man. So people tell me I'm crazy. You know, people look at me and I talk about how I like my job. I like my company, everything. They're like, wow, what's wrong with you? I'm like,
I'm in the exact same boat because I really do like my job and I like the people I work with a lot, and you know, they treat me very well. I just talked about this on the last show or the show before it, you know, how my job treats me and how, you know, well I'm taken care of, and that more than anything means the world, especially in this day and age when most companies just don't give a fuck
right
about their employees, or they make it, you know, a token effort to pretend to care about them. Yeah, my job really does care about them, which for government contractors, you know, rare in and of itself. But I like the job. You know, it's not perfect, but what, as you said, what is? There is no perfect job,
right?
You know, other than getting paid to stay home and getting blowjobs every day, you know?
You're right. Yeah, I'm an official blowjob evaluator. That's my job title.
and at my age, you know, instead of a 40-hour week, it would be a 4-second week. If I was lucky.
Exactly. Yeah. How about you? How was your holiday?
It was really good. We celebrated on Christmas Eve this year. My nephew, you know, who's divorced, had his kids on Christmas Eve this year instead of Christmas. So that's why we did it then, so everybody could be together. And it's kind of interesting. My oldest grandnephew, Braden, he got a couple of t-shirts. One of them was a Scream t-shirt, you know, the movie Scream.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other one was And you've seen the meme of this, I'm sure. The many moods of Jason Voorhees, and it's a mask for every mood. He got that on a t-shirt. And it just surprised me because I didn't know that he was really like into horror movies or anything. And I looked at my sister and I said, yeah, you can tell he's related. The apple doesn't fall very far from the branches in this case. And then my other grandnephew, Grayson, got a Jack Skellington t-shirt. So, you know, I have infected them with my love for horror.
Nice.
So I'm quite happy about that. And yeah, I got some cool stuff this year. I got the Liquid Sky Blu-ray. And Liquid Sky is the most 80s movie ever made.
Yes, I do agree with you there.
And this is a beautiful transfer. It's got a shitload of special features on it and a couple of audio commentaries. And it was on my Amazon list, which I have to send my sister every year so she knows what to get me. And that was one of the things she got. And I got it home, and I was really excited to watch it. And I forgot my Blu-ray player wasn't working. So I couldn't watch it Christmas night. But the next day, I got onto the Walmart website, ordered one, and spent the extra $6 and got it within 75 minutes.
Right. Because,
that's the kind of society we live in today.
Right. Instant gratification.
Two-day shipping? Fuck that. Overnight shipping? Fuck that. 75 minutes or less? Yeah, that's where we're at.
Dude, I needed some stuff from Home Depot, and they had you spend a certain amount, and it was free home delivery. And it's very clever, because they preyed upon my inherent laziness to get me to spend a little bit more money than I would have just to get the free delivery.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm
like, yeah, when I don't really like super duper need that widget. But free delivery, so right? Give me one of them.
And the other thing that she got that I want to spend a little bit talking about is, here it is. Okay. It was a book, and it's called The Exorcist Legacy, 50 Years of Fear.
Oh, yeah, I know that book. Yep, I don't have it, but I know that book.
Yeah, it just came out in July of this year. And it was written by a guy named Nat Segeloff. And he had done biographies of William Friedkin and William Peter Blatty. And he was also the publicist for The Exorcist. So he has, aside from, you know, his own interest in the movie, he has some firsthand knowledge from being a publicist. And you would think after 50 years, everything that there was to know about The Exorcist as is already known. And I'm only halfway through it. It's a fairly quick read. But there's things in there that I didn't know about it. You know, a little behind this. Now, I think we talked about this once, that the character of Chris, the mother in The Exorcist, was based on Shirley MacLaine.
Yes.
Okay. But did you know that the character of Burke Dennings, the obnoxious English film director, was based on the real obnoxious English film director, J. Lee Thompson?
That I did not know.
I did not know that either. And J. Lee Thompson, for those who are not familiar with the name, directed 10 to Midnight, a classic Charles Bronson movie. He did Death Wish 4. And the classic Cape Fear.
Mm.
And he was actually, there was talk about him directing The Exorcist, J. Lee Thompson. And William Peter Blatty basically said, over my dead fucking body, is he ever going to touch anything I've ever written?
Wow.
Because he considered him a hack. And he didn't want him anywhere near it. But oddly enough, a few years later, J. Lee Thompson did his own exorcism type movie, the reincarnation of Peter Proud.
Mm.
But it's really, it's very interesting. There's a lot of shit in there that I really didn't know. And before the show, we were talking about how we're of an age where there was a point in our lives where it was very easy for us to be out of touch, where nobody could reach us.
Right.
There's a story about The Exorcist and it, the Pazuzu statue that Father Marin finds in the Iraqi desert, you know, the big one.
Yep, yep.
Well, it was getting, you know, time to shoot that scene, and they had just flown into Iran to do it, and the statue wasn't there, and they couldn't find it. They had no idea where it was in the mail. And it was during a time where Iran was at war. Well, surprise there. And they couldn't, you couldn't make international calls outside of Iran, you know, from Iran to an outside country. So they had to travel several hundred miles to get to the airport, fly to another country, I think it was Jordan, and then make an international call just to find out where the statue was. Now, can you imagine trying to do that today, or telling somebody that actually happened, you know, that they had to fly to another country to make an international call, where now you can just get on Facebook Messenger and talk to somebody?
Yeah, man, it's nuts.
You know, it's amazing how far we've come, technology that we can act, because I remember when my brother-in-law and sister were had just gotten married, and he was in the Navy, and they were stationed in Gaeta, Italy, and the phone calls, the amount of money those phone calls cost, when my mom, you know, we would call my sister over in Italy, how ridiculously expensive they were, you know. And now I talked to Wade in Wales, you know, or somebody else in Europe for nothing, basically, you know, other than what it cost me to pay for my internet. You know, it's, and it sounds so much better than what an overseas call sounded 40, 50 years ago. You know, back then it sounded like you were talking into a tin can.
The first time I went to Italy, I want to say it was either 87 or 88. I can't remember that, but it doesn't matter. And yeah, I was traveling. I was at the hotel and I wanted to call back home. I had to call the hotel operator, wait for them to get me an international operator, tell them the number and everything. Then they would, it would take a while, and then they would call back. They called me back and said, okay. And it was like, I want to say it was like $11 or $12 a minute to call back to the States, you know? So I was like, Ma, we got to keep this short, or you're gonna be pissed when you get the phone bill, you know? Like, yeah, but now you're right. I mean, I can instant message my family in Italy right now, you know, or call them, you know, FaceTime them right now, you know, for what I pay for my cell phone bill, you know?
In fact, they actually show that, if you remember in The Exorcist, when she's trying to get a hold of her ex-husband on Reagan's birthday.
Yes, that's true.
You know, and you try and tell kids that today, and not even kids, you know, maybe Gen Zers or something, who are far from kids now, that we used to have to do that. And, you know, you get this look like, what was that, the fucking Stone Age? You know, were you, you know, next door neighbors to the Rubbles and the Flintstones? You know, how barbaric.
Dude, it's so funny. So Mark, our buddy Mark Boutros and I went to the casino over the border in Pennsylvania the other day. And just in the car, you know, we were just talking about how, like, kids, like, growing up right now, they think that their lifetime is the only time that existed. Like, They don't know about the before times, like anything that happened before they were born, you know? So you're right. My daughter will sometimes look at me like, what the hell are you even saying to me right now? You know, like, you made that up. And I'm like, no, I wish I did.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. It is funny.
It is. My grandnephews were spoiled fucking rotten. They both got Xbox S's each, you know, one each, you know, $100 gift cards for, you know, Xbox Online or Live or whatever it's called. They both got 55-inch TVs,
Jesus Christ, a
trampoline for the backyard, and a bunch of other shit. And I, you know, they're unwrapping all this stuff, and I looked at my sister and I said, you know, everything that they got today, if you total it up, costs more than everything we ever got put together for Christmas when we were growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then my you know, the oldest grandnephew says, well, things are more expensive now. I'm like, who the fuck asked you? You know?
Yeah, I mean, so my daughter has never really been I want kid, you know. If anything, we were, because she was an only child, and we were probably a little guilty of spoiling her a bit around the holidays, you know. And she did well this Christmas, but it was definitely scaled back, you know. And my daughter is smart. She even said, like, look, Dad, I know I'm not a little kid anymore, you know, and I'm in college and everything, and you're paying for that and everything. And I said, sweetie, I get it, but don't worry about it. But she was more into, like, experiences, right?
Yeah.
So I got her tickets to a Devil's game, and I got her tickets to go see Little Shop of Horrors in New York.
Nice.
And those were, like, the two big gifts. And then I got her, she likes candles, so I got her a couple candles. I got her, you mentioned t-shirts. I got her a t-shirt. It's like a little duckling, but he's holding a knife, and it says, I choose violence. So I'm like,
I like that.
She's like, oh, Dad, you know me so well. I'm like, well, you're my kid.
You know?
And just little things like that, you know, like stuff for her apartment and whatnot. So, but for both of us, it's way more important to spend time together than any material thing we could buy each other.
Yeah.
You know,
definitely.
And plus, she knows, like, if there's anything she needs, like, for the apartment, I'll just get it for her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay. Or, you know, so, but it was good. I still, dude, you know, and we talk about it all the time on the show, how I feel about Christmas. I still love watching people open their gifts. So I do get a little something for everybody, my brother, my sister-in-law, everybody gets a little something at least to open presents just because I love it.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah, no, yeah, I do the same thing.
Yeah. Right. We had a good time. And I even told my daughter, listen, don't not spend your money. You're working now. Do not spend your money on your old man. So, but the one cool thing she got me, because she listens, she knows that I'm into barbecue and I love hot sauce. So she got me, like, this big assortment thing of hot sauces and a big assortment of different flavors of barbecue sauces.
Oh, nice.
And I'm like, see, there you go. That is something I'll actually use instead of some gadget that I don't need or care about. You know?
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So
yeah. All right. So going back to the Exorcist book, everybody needs to pick this one up. It is, if you like The Exorcist or if you like movies, this is definitely worth picking up.
All right. I'll have to check it out because, you know, it's one of my top three favorite horror movies.
Yeah.
And yeah.
And I'm sure it's got, well, I don't know for sure. Let me check. But I'm assuming it's got like an audiobook version for you too, because I know you won't actually read it.
Probably not. I mean, and my daughter and I, again, we had been talking about books and stuff, and she's like, "Dad, I didn't get you any books or anything because I just know how that's going to go." And I'm like, "Well, you're a smart kid."
Yeah. Yeah, it is available on audiobook.
Nice.
So, all right. All right. So, we had only one celebrity death this year, or this week, I should say, and that was Tom Smothers of the Smothers Brothers.
Yeah. And I had kind of forgotten. You know,
yeah.
About the, well, Smothers Brothers. I thought they both were dead.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's that thing, out of sight, out of mind. And he was, I think he was 83 or something like that. He was, so he had a good long life. And his brother is still alive, Dick Smothers. It's a dick.
It's a dick.
But I always liked the Smothers Brothers. My parents couldn't stand them because of their politics. But, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, I didn't give a shit about their politics.
Yeah.
I just always thought they like, were funny.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And just, you know, Mom always did like you best. And, you know, they were trailblazers. They were so ahead of their time, particularly with their TV show, and it was because of the politics that their TV show got canceled, you know, but they never once buckled under to the pressure to change their material or to change their views. They always held true to their beliefs, and I have to give them credit for that, because, you know, it would be so easy, I suppose, even specifically during that time, to buckle under and toe the line and do what the networks wanted you to do, and they just would refuse to do it. And yeah, you know, gotta love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, I had forgotten about them, but that, you know, it's funny talking to younger people who have no idea who the fucking Smothers Brothers are.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, oh, I give up. I just can't.
And Steve Martin was a writer on their show.
No kidding.
Yeah. That was one of his first gigs.
That I did not know.
Yes.
Huh. Well, I learned something today.
You know, you learned a couple of things. You just forgot about J. Lee Thompson already.
That's true. I did.
Oh,
I did.
Yeah. All right, so I saw the movie Saltburn this past week, and Saltburn, excuse me, is the new Barry Keoghan movie, and I actually knew nothing about it when I decided to watch it, other than I'd heard it was controversial, that it was rather I think I saw the word disgusting. And whenever a movie is called disgusting, you know, I automatically, you know, my ears prick up for that.
Sign me up.
Yeah, exactly. And if John Waters were making movies like he made in the early 70s, Saltburn very well may have been one of them. It has those kind of scenes in it.
Really?
Yeah. Drinking semen out of a bathtub from the water that's going down the drain pretty much starts the movie off.
Okay.
So it's a family movie. You know, it's one you want to watch with your grandma and your mom. I liked it. I enjoyed it. Yes, there are some gross-out scenes in it, but I wouldn't consider them to be What's the word I'm looking for? Oh, shit. I hate that. They were necessary for the plot. They weren't just there for the gross out factor.
Gotcha. I gotcha.
The only issue that I have with it is you kind of know what the, if you can even call it a twist ending, is, because you kind of see it coming from a mile away, but that doesn't make the journey any less interesting or boring. And I am telling you, Barry Keoghan is one of the most amazing actors in my lifetime. He is just, you know, phenomenal in this. Although I will say the character in it is almost a little bit too similar to the character that he played in Killing of a Sacred Deer. It's kind of like if that character grew up, it would become the character that he is in Saltburn. But the acting all around is just brilliant. And it's probably not for those who are easily queasy. Like if the scene that I described made you want to hurl, then the movie probably is not going to be for you. But for those of us of iron constitutions and strong stomachs and grew up on talking assholes from John Waters' Pink Flamingos and the dog shit eating divine, then this is, you know, mild in comparison. And I actually find it kind of funny how people are talking about some of the scenes that are in this movie, as if things like that had never been put on celluloid before. And, you know, as I said, all I do is go back to John Waters', you know, early movies, and right. They were far, far more gross out than what was in Saltburn. But it's well acted, it's beautifully shot, and it's well worth a watch.
Cool. I will definitely have to check it out. Like I said before we started recording, I didn't really know what it was about. I saw it come up, like, when I was browsing for shit to watch.
And
I just didn't pay too much attention to it. But now I'm going to have to check it out.
It will make you feel very uncomfortable. It makes you want to squirm in your seat, like you shouldn't be watching it.
Well, and in that case, I must watch it.
And it's very rare a movie makes me feel that way, but Saltburn did. So, and it should win a shitload of awards, but it probably won't because of the subject matter and the content, which is a shame. But there you go.
Cool. So yeah. I binged all in one day season one of Reacher on Amazon Prime, which is on the Jack Reacher books.
Right.
And dude, it was so good. I was up until 2 a.m. to finish it because I had to know what happened next. I just had to. It is so far superior to the Tom Cruise feature films, which seemed more like an attempt to force a big time movie star into the stories.
Yeah.
You know? And this one, it seems far more organic, and Alan Ritchson, who plays Jack Reacher, is way better in the role than Tom Cruise was. And plus, he fits what... Now, I don't know how much you know about the Jack Reacher books, but he's ex-military, you know, and everything. And in the books, he's really buff, you know? Definitely not tiny Tom Cruise. And Alan Ritchson put on like 30 pounds of muscle for the role. And he's fantastic as Jack Reacher. The whole cast is amazing. And it's almost like the grown-ups got together to make a series with no like political message. No, it's just a crime thriller. You know, the characters are flawed, you know. The female lead is fantastic. Like, she's tough, but without being like a girl boss. You know what I mean? Like this modern, like in these modern movies now where there's just a girl boss who's just good at everything. No one in this movie, in this show is good at everything, you know, even Reacher, like he's good at fighting, but there are times when he gets his ass kicked, you know, because he's fighting mercenaries and stuff who are as well-trained as he is, you know? So he takes a fucking beating, you know? But he, a lot of times he just uses his wits and stuff to get the upper hand. So I highly recommend it. I will probably be up all night tonight watching season two. But it is really, really good. And again, it's refreshing to see a good show with a solid male action hero, but with a great supporting cast. Like I said, the female lead, she's badass, but also feminine, like, you know, because of course they fall for each other, but not in a way where she's like fawning over him, you know, like some doe-eyed teenager.
Right.
In fact, the first scene where they're like, they run afoul of these bad guys, and it's rain, it's the old, oh no, our clothes are wet, you know, oh, we have to get out of these wet clothes, you know, and I'm like, here we go. But nope. She is in underwear and a t-shirt. She gets in the bed. He sleeps on the floor. They talk. And then she's like, all right, well, good night, Reacher. And that's it. They just go to sleep. They do not hook up until way later in the show. And I'm like, that was fucking cool. Like, you could tell that she likes him, you know? But she's like, I really just met this guy. I'm not going to do him right now, you know? And I thought that was really interesting, that like a storytelling choice, you know?
Yeah, that is, because, you know, you just don't see that anymore.
No. And the only criticism I have is, so Bruce McGill plays like one of the bad guy, like one of the head bad guys. And he was a little over the top, almost like a stereotypical mustache twirling villain. Like, you knew right away, oh yeah, that's the bad guy. You know what I mean? There was no twist, like, oh, it was the butler, you know?
Yeah.
Anytime, like, look, it takes place in the South, in Georgia, but anytime you've got a guy in a white fucking suit, like a Boss Hog fucking suit, walking around with a cane with like a giant fucking fake diamond on the top of it, you're like, yep, that's the villain. So I thought that was a little silly, a little hokey that they telegraphed it like that, you know?
Yeah.
But highly recommended, though. Just highly recommended. Every other character in it is really, really good. So
I may check that out. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but I will give it a shot.
Well, so you know what it is? It's I knew of it, and I was in no hurry to watch it. Then there were a couple of YouTube videos with just selected scenes, like the fight scenes, and they were really well choreographed. And I'm like, and then I watched my one of my favorite critics, the Critical Drinker. I watched his review of it, and he spoke very highly of it. And he and I tend to like the same things. So I was like, all right, I'll give it a go. And then after the first episode, I was like, well, time to put on some coffee. It's going to be a late fucking night.
Yeah, I had that experience with the TV show. Mr. Robot. It's only four seasons. And I'm surprised about this because it's been over since I think 2019 or 2020. It stars Rami Malek, and he plays a hacker, the world's most brilliant hacker type of a character, but certainly not the stereotype that you would think. And Christian Slater is also in it. And it's basically about this hacking group that is trying to take down this mega corporation that controls everything. And I probably heard of it when it first started, but it just didn't really kind of appeal to me. It's, you know, cyber hacker, yeah, blah, yeah, I've seen that before. But I just started watching, and I forget what it was that made me take a look for it. It's on Amazon Prime or Hulu, one of them. And I watched the first episode, and I was hooked. And, oh, I know, it was on a Reddit channel, and they were talking about it was one of the best series that had ever been made on TV. And I'm like, well, that's fairly high praise.
Right.
And I would not call it the best series ever made for TV. It is certainly up there so far with other things that I've seen. And I really don't want to give a whole lot away because there's, and you know, I don't normally care about spoilers or anything. But there's, you know, talking more about it would actually spoil the show. But Rami Malek is really brilliant in this. And there's not a whole lot of other people who I'm familiar with that are in it other than Christian Slater. But it's just very well done. It's very interesting. The first episode, really the whole first season, I'm just towards the middle of the second season right now. That whole first season, though, it keeps you on the edge of your seat. It's a very, very good techno thriller, which is something I never thought I'd say, because I kind of view those as like romance novels. You know, just kind of the throwaway of the literary world. You know, as if what I write is any better.
Yeah, listen, you've never had Fabio on any of your book covers, I'm just saying.
Not for lack of trying.
I'm well aware of Mr. Robot. I don't know why I never watched it.
Because as I said, at least for me, the initial concept just didn't grab me. You know, kind of like the concept for Reacher, and I'd heard of Reacher before I mentioned it, but it's not in my radar of things that I really want to watch.
Yeah. But
when somebody said it was one of the best series ever made, I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to put that to the test. And that probably was somebody on the marketing team for it, because yeah, I'm sure they got a whole lot of people watching it just from saying that.
Best series. It's like best series ever made. Have you heard of a little show called MASH or All in the Family? Or I'm just saying.
Yeah. And I kind of have to differentiate, for something like All in the Family, while I would actually probably call it one of the best TV shows ever made, I more or less refer to it as the best sitcom ever made, because there are hour-long dramas that have been better than All in the Family or better than MASH, but it's apples and oranges.
Right, exactly.
You know, so you can't compare a 60-minute drama to a 30-minute sitcom and say one is better than the other, or one is the best of all time, because they're so different. And you know, both you and I don't like this concept of best anyway, because it's so subjective.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I mean, everything is so subjective. I look at some of the stuff, I don't know if you saw it, but I posted about how, and just a couple of people said thanks for the review, and I didn't really review Wonka. All I did was write, oh, I went to see this and I was not disappointed, right? And then someone, of course, I love the people who never bother with you and they only pop up to disagree with you, you know?
Yeah.
So some dipshit, you know, on my Facebook, you know, comes, oh, I wasn't disappointed either. It totally sucked. And I'm like, all right, I don't remember asking you or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, that's why, like, when now everyone on Facebook, dude, every blogger, every person who has a website is giving their best of 2023 list. And I don't know, maybe we'll do that too. But yeah, you're right. We never do that. We always just talk about our personal favorites.
Yeah, we should probably do that next week. Our favorite movies of 2023.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, let's do it. Let's definitely do it. Because,
you know, if I had given it, you know, more than 20 seconds thought today when I asked you what we're going to talk about, I probably would have come up with that. But I didn't think about it.
Well, and now that you just said it, I feel like a dumbass for not thinking of it. You know,
right?
Like, yeah. But no, you're right. Any kind of art or anything is subjective. And one, although, you know, well, we can talk about it when we do our favorites. I also think that there are some things that are just objectively bad. Like,
yeah,
Plan 9 from Outer Space might be fun to watch, you know, but it's just an objectively bad movie. It's just not a well-made movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So yeah, like, no, for someone to say, oh, no, what are you talking about? It's a great movie. I'm like, what? Shut up. Come on. Everybody knows it's not a good movie.
It got its reputation because it is such a shitty movie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like Sharknado. Everybody knows they suck, but they were fun. They were like a cultural phenomenon for a little while.
Yeah.
You know, and people just would live tweet when they were watching them and group watch and everything. Even Tara Reid, when I did my interview with Tara Reid, I said, so how much fun was it to work on Sharknado? And she's like, it was so much fun. And then she even said, look, we knew that the concept of the movie was absurd, you know? And she told me a lot of people like give her and the other stars like grief about it. Like, why'd you star in such a shitty movie? And she's like, well, you think we don't know that it was a shitty movie? Like, we weren't making an Academy Award winner. And I'm like, Tara, you're my new favorite person. Like, just for saying that.
Yeah. Because it's rare when an actor, actress will actually be honest like that.
Yeah, at this point, I don't think she gives a shit, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's like, yeah, I was in Sharknado, and...
It paid my electricity bill for the month. What a
right?
Nice.
Exactly. So, whoops. What is my computer complaining about now? Oh, whatever. It's my antivirus telling me it's time for your annual deep clean on your computer. I'm like, okay. whatever you say.
Yes, I'll trust you, Windows.
So I always find it interesting whenever I just Google entertainment news, because it's like, well, what does the internet think is entertainment news? So ET Online, Entertainment Tonight Online, these are the latest news. Ariana Grande talks about feeling, quote, so deeply misunderstood. I can't wait to watch that little snippet. And then of the 9, quote unquote, top stories on the homepage, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are about Travis Kelce and Taylor Swift.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm like, now... I don't care, you know, good for them. Like, if they're happy together, you know, he's a billionaire, he's a star football player, who cares, right? But some of the headlines, Travis Kelce shares his New Year's resolution to bang more pop stars. I don't know.
Right.
Travis Kelce reveals the Christmas gift Taylor Swift's brother got him. A stop banging my sister t-shirt. Yeah. Like, what? Like, what? I can't. Like, what the hell could that even be? Gypsy Rose Blanchard posts first pick after being released from prison. Who the fuck is Gypsy Rose Blanchard?
She murdered her mother.
Oh,
She was, I only know bits and pieces of it, but apparently her mother kept her locked up in the house. Her mother had Munchausen syndrome.
Here it is. Okay.
And so the woman who just got released had her boyfriend kill her mother. So she didn't actually kill her. She got her boyfriend to kill her.
Right here. Okay. Admitted to helping her boyfriend kill her abusive mother. Confessed that she convinced her boyfriend to stab her mother to death as she slept. Prosecutor sentenced her to 10 years in prison in a plea deal. Interesting.
Yeah.
Her mother, Dede Blanchard, was found to have convinced those around her, including doctors, that her daughter was afflicted with leukemia and muscular dystrophy. How do you, like, what fucking shitty doctor did you go to? Was it Dr. Nick from The Simpsons? Hi, everybody.
That's exactly what I was thinking. Dr. Nick from The Simpsons.
Like, you went to some back alley guy and, like, yeah, just whatever. Give me $100 and I'll sign whatever, like, you want, you know? Because last I checked, isn't there, like, a test for leukemia?
Yeah, I mean, there's a blood. I mean, it's a blood disease. There's a blood test. Yeah, I don't get that.
Wow. So the boyfriend was convicted of murder and sentenced to life in prison without parole. Wow.
Yeah, and it seems to me that she should have gotten, at least something similar. That's one of those situations where, regardless of the reason, they shouldn't be able to get a plea deal.
Well, I don't know. It depends, I guess. There's worse things. Like if your dad is raping you and you shoot him in the face, I think that can be justifiable homicide.
Oh, definitely.
You know
definitely.
What I mean? Like, yeah. So.
Well, yeah, no, I get what you're saying. But, I mean, you know, she and the boyfriend colluded on it. You know, and had it not been for her, you know, he never would have killed her.
That's true.
You know, so in specific situations like that is what I mean. They should both have equal punishment.
I didn't even know anything about this. Like, so when I saw that headline, I'm like, Gypsy Rose Blanchard, like, who the hell is that? But then when you mentioned, then when you said it, I'm like, I definitely seem to recall that. Why John Party retired from alcohol and if he'll ever unretire? Another person I never heard of.
Who?
John Party, P-A-R-D-I. Apparently has retired from alcohol. Okay.
Oh, so he's a drunk, in other words.
I guess.
And he's in recovery. Who the fuck is that?
I don't know. Now I have to know. So let's see.
Yeah, I'm looking him up. Oh, he's a country singer. That's why. Oh,
okay.
That's why I don't know him.
Okay. Says he's more than 100. Well, good for him.
With the classics, Dirt on My Boots, Head Over Boots. Well, I can relate to Head Over Boots sometimes. Heartache on the Dance Floor, Last Night Lonely.
I definitely Ain't Always relate the to Cowboy.
Yeah, all classics.
Yes.
We'll be singing all those 50 years from now.
Heartache medication. Isn't that what the booze is for? Just saying.
He's on a statin now. That's what he means.
Yes. All these Travis Kelce, oh my God. Emma Heming reveals holidays and anniversaries are hard amid Bruce Willis dementia diagnosis. Well, I should think so.
Well, think he was gonna be happy about it, and
So here's a headline: Cardi B likes post denying she and Offset are back together. So some celebrity clicks like on a social media post, and somehow that's news.
It's a slow news week.
Wow.
You know, it's the week between Christmas and New Year's Day. It's a slow news week. Nobody's doing fucking anything.
Dude, I don't even know what day it is. It's such a weird time because I always take this week off.
Yeah.
And then it just becomes like this weird time warp kind of a thing where I have no idea where I am, what I'm supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Well, I know I am taking a mental health day today.
Good for you. How's that going?
Well, I'm still retarded. Oh, speaking of retarded.
No. Oh,
I saw Ricky Gervais's new special, Armageddon, this week.
Ah, okay.
Came out on Christmas. And I absolutely love it. It's my favorite special of his. I would be hard-pressed to say it's the funniest special, but it's the one that I liked the most so far of all the specials that he's done for Netflix and whatnot. And, of course, you know, he's getting shit, which is exactly how he designed it, because that gets him, more views on Netflix. But it's genuinely funny. Because you know I love Ricky Gervais.
Yep.
I absolutely love him. And if you like Ricky Gervais, it's more of the same. And I saw somebody complain that it just was more of the same, that he hasn't changed his shtick in 20, 30 years or however long he's been doing stand-up. And I'm thinking, why would he? It's working. You know?
Right.
He's selling out stadiums. You know, a comedian is selling out fucking stadiums. You know, the O2 specifically in London, you know, he's selling out. You know, that's, I think, a 30,000 seat place or something. You know, he does massive amounts of, makes massive amounts of money doing his stand-up shows. Why would he change what he does?
Dude, but that's such a silly thing to say, because comedians, for the most part, yes, they come up with new material, but their style never changes, you know?
No.
Carlin is Carlin, you know? And Tosh is Tosh. Like, they all retain their style, and they just come up with different observations on life.
Yeah.
You know? It's such a dumb thing to say, you know?
It is, because even with Carlin, because when he started out, you know, he worked clean, you know? And even when he went from clean to, you know, the present, you know, his
quote unquote dirty words, yeah.
Dirty words. And then his more political stuff later on, he still had the same type of delivery. I mean, nothing changed about him other than what he made jokes about.
Right.
You know, and, you know, Ricky Gervais is the same. And you've got to watch it, because I really do want to talk about it. But
all right, I will check it out. Jokes. It's on my list. I added it to my queue.
Yeah,
I just have to be in a certain frame of mind to watch a stand-up special.
Yeah, no, I get that. So. And well, that's actually what I watched when I found out I couldn't watch Liquid Sky. I needed something to cheer me up on Christmas night, or Christmas Eve, I should say. So,
all right. And just like that, we did find stuff to talk about for a fucking hour.
Yes, we did.
How about that? Okay. So, my New Year's resolution, and I never ever make them, is to actually start getting caught up on some writing and some scripts and some things that I actually want to produce in 2024. So, that's my New Year's resolution, and I'm hopefully going to stick to it.
And
not that you asked.
Yeah, well, no, and not that I care.
Well, fair enough.
But my New Year's resolution is to make the attempt to at least get my next book out sooner than 3 years. Because that seems to be my pattern. Every 3 years I put out a new book, and that's just it's too much time. So I have to stop being so lazy. Having said that, as I mentioned on the show, The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow is complete. I'm going to start the edits on it next week, so it'll be out by the end of winter, beginning of spring. And I've got my next project in mind already, and it's going to be called The Spectral Hotel.
Huh. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's about a haunted apartment complex.
Nice.
And that's just because you always see haunted house movies, and it's always some creepy fucking Victorian piece of shit that's fallen apart. They always look scary. Like even in The Shining, the Overlook looked creepy as fucking hell from the outside.
Absolutely.
You know, you almost never ever see a haunted house movie or a ghost story movie where it doesn't look creepy or it takes place during the day. So I wanted to write a ghost story that basically took place in an urban area, like a city, in the daylight. You know, and that's what Spectral Hotel is basically going to, whatever I said it was going to be. See, I'm attached to the title so much I forgot it already.
Forgot it in 30 seconds.
Spectral Heights. That's exactly what it's going to be.
Nice.
Yeah.
I look forward to not reading that one as well.
Yes. Well, don't get ahead of yourself. Look forward to not reading The Tree of Everlasting Sorrow first. So.
True. All right, man. Good stuff.
What's coming up for you with whatever the fuck it is that you do?
Not much, really. Well, I'm gonna. I really need to get back in the swing of things, dude. Like I've been so lazy. I really do, and you know, just I have a whole bunch of scripts that are half done. I need to stop neglecting my website, you know, and just add content more regularly. I hand out my business card. It's got my website all over it. And then they go there and there's like nothing new there. So I really need to do that. And then that's really it, to just get back in the swing of things and actually film something in 2024. I have at least a dozen ideas, you know, and could go with any one of them. So we'll see which one floats to the top.
All right.
And that's really it. So other than that, dude, but it'll be the new year next time we talk. So happy new year. I don't really have any new year's plans. I stopped caring about New Year's Eve like 30 years ago.
Yeah. So same here.
I don't even know what I'm going to do. I'll probably just go to my friend's restaurant and just hang out.
Even when I was younger, I never did New Year's Eve parties or anything like that. It just, you know, it just never really appealed to me. And the last time I actually did something for New Year's was 1999. And that's, you know, when my whole family got together for New Year's Eve that year, because it was Y2K. Mm. So we all, in case anything happened, we all wanted to be together. Now, nobody said that, but that was, you know, the underlying reason why we decided to celebrate New Year's that year. Because we never did it before that, and we haven't done it since. You know, so.
Right.
All right,
so man. Stuff.
I want to thank all of our listeners, each one of you, all two of you, for listening and continuing to patronize our little corner of the internet. You know, I really do appreciate that, and especially after 10 years, the fact that we still have listeners after that still amazes me.
Absolutely, man.
I hope everybody has a happy new year, and we will be back, and we will have some guests this next year, and God knows what else is going to happen on the show.
Absolutely. Happy new year, everybody.
And until next time, may all of your journeys be filled with pure imagination.